I don't know what how to say this any other way, but I am very proud, happy to welcome on, I guess I can call her a colleague of mine now that she is officially joined the Crusade Channel. That is the one and only Magdalene Rose. You've heard her on my program many times when I need some cutting edge political analyses, as they would say. She is the one I turn to. So I'm very, very happy to have her as a part of the Crusade. And welcome to the Bearer Brief, Miss Magdalene Rose. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me on.
Pleasure is all mine. And I just want to say it was really another great talk I had with Mike this morning, learning a little bit about your background, because you and I never really talked about your background because I wanted to get into the subjects. And we'll get into the subject in a little bit about Chip Gaines. I definitely want to talk about Chip. But I didn't know that you were you bounced across the New England area. It must have really sharpened your skills as a conservative, because I'll tell you what, Magdalene, when I lived in this, I was born and raised in the great state of Rhode Island, and I was a flaming lib until I moved down to Texas until I was 25. So you would have been dealing with people like me, but it definitely sharpened your political skills at a young age. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, it definitely did. And also being on the debate team, especially during junior and senior year, while Trump was running and right after the election, it definitely sharpened it. And I think being in that area during such a nasty political time, it helped me survive in the young conservative world, because I don't have to debate every point. You know, I don't have to try to be really nasty about it, because I've already sat in classrooms and had teachers say, well, Trump is evil, and I have been grade docked, and I've had teachers penalize me for what I thought. And I think when you have that situation, when you get into the political field, it sort of prepares you on a toughness level as well. So not even just debating with leftists, but dealing with the onslaught. You know, if I have a video that does really well, I'll get a lot of really nasty comments or DMs and things. So when you were in the cafeteria being called names because you were supporting a presidential candidate, it prepares you for the real life realities of being in the political world.
You know, high school is nasty to begin with. I mean, I was a high school teacher for 8 years, so I can tell you, I'm both sides of the aisle, how nasty it is. But to be in that environment and to be so openly supporting somebody, and you just said it, it wasn't even fellow students. You could say, all right, yeah, the other students, but you had supposed adults. You had supposed adults attacking you. That had to just be the height of just clown world in a way.
Yeah, it definitely was. I had one history teacher junior year who was a real nightmare about it. And it was an AP history course, so we really weren't supposed to be talking about current events. Everything is really regimented in what you study in those courses. And she just couldn't stop. She would talk about how she wished that Trump and Sarah Palin would just go off on a little island somewhere far away. So she was really a nightmare about it. And I had an English teacher who was a Bernie Sanders supporter. And the truth is, if you're going to be political in a classroom and you're a teacher, you have to be neutral about it if you're going to foster political conversation. And that just was never the case. So I learned how adults can sort of lose their cachet of being authority figures when they're in that position with politics, because they become just like anybody else.
Yeah, and as a former history teacher and having to deal with that in the break rooms, and when kids used to ask me, who do you support? I would always try to be coy about it, or I'd always try to present both sides, because I understood the power position of being a teacher and having a young student who's still forming political opinions asking me about that. And these teachers, of course, we talk about critical race theory and all these other stuff, they enjoy that power dynamic. So it always upsets them when they have somebody like you. I mean, you've written pro-life books. You're very pro-life, and you're very solid in your values. You can't be swayed. And nothing upsets a teacher more than a supposed, their words, ignorant student who won't listen to their obviously much more solid and beautiful and correct worldview.
Yeah, and also the pro-life thing, it really is one of the things that upsets teachers. And I think a lot of female teachers also use it against female students, because young conservative boys don't tend to make this one of their main issues, because they know they'll get so attacked. But female teachers will say things, or just other girls in high school, like, you don't care about women, you don't care about, you know, girls' dreams and things. And it's a very, it becomes a very nasty situation. That's why I think in the young conservative world, it's really important to have on the people who run pro-life organizations, so young conservative girls learn how to defend their positions, because it's really easy to be characterized as not being supportive of women or not caring about women's dreams.
I mean, we'll end on this. I didn't even think we were going to go here, but it's fantastic. Magdalen Rose, newest addition to the Crusade Channel, political analyst for us. You're completely 100% right, because look at what happened. Look at the adulation and the praise that was heaped on this girl here in Texas for spouting off pro-abortion messages in the middle of a graduation, where the majority of those parents, at least, and maybe even the kids, I forgot the town, or at least profess Christians and most likely pro-life, and she commandeered it, and she essentially shamed the entire audience. And you know, this is me saying there had to be at least one or two teachers behind her, egging her on, telling her, you can just do this and free speech and all these other things, because the way it was so calculated, she couldn't have done that on her own.
She couldn't, and I'll just tell you something as a young person. I can guarantee you that even people who agree with her in her class are angry about it, because she took away the accomplishment of everyone in that graduating class of, you know, getting through COVID academically, and a lot of them getting sent to colleges or trade schools or whatever. She took away that celebratory moment, and she made it about herself. So even no matter what she said, if she was going to use it as a political statement, she made the entire graduating class's event about herself, which to me is very selfish. I wouldn't do that for something I believe politically. So I think for her, even if people are patting her on the back for it, I would guess in her circle of friends, in her community, she's not being applauded by parents who feel like they had their own child's graduation taken from them.
Yeah, exactly. It's absolutely insane the way that she was almost immediately put on this pedestal of being brave. You're not being brave by recycling the same talking points that you can hear from any Democratic politician, any celebrity, any Twitter account that allows you to say all that, and these the way they just egg them on, to the point where if you are pro-life and you tried to say that, you've been vilified, like you said, you don't care about women and all this other stuff. It's a nasty game. And the fact that a lot of people really respect the fact that you are young, and that's not a negative. Sometimes people try to push it as, well, you're young, but yet the fact is, you don't care. This is who Magdalen Rose is, and if you don't like it, you can kindly go pound sand.
Right, and I think that that's why I've been really successful, because it's sort of what you see is what you get. You know, I'm not somebody who goes out and says a million conservative things to get followers from it. I really am a conservative, and I also say things like, I watch The Bachelor and I listen to Taylor Swift music. I'm a real person, and I think for young conservatives, there's always a pressure to be like the perfect young conservative. But it doesn't help you long term, and it doesn't help the movement long term, because you need real people who are pro-life but are still, you know, watching TV and hanging out with their parents.
So what do you think what's going on? My wife and we'll just say we used to watch The Bachelor religiously.
Yeah.
We bailed out after, I think, two seasons ago. What is going on? Yeah. That whole thing is a mess right now. It's an absolute garbage fire, because you had milquetoast Chris Hansen. My wife and I used to joke. I was like, I would love to be Chris Hansen, because he's just the guy that shows up. He's like, hey, this is the show. Pay me money and I'll go away now. And even that guy, milquetoast Chris Hansen, couldn't survive cancel culture and the woke ideology.
No, he couldn't. I think The Bachelor really has realized what a time bomb it is. You know, when you make everyone live and die by really strict woke rules, I mean, that's your right to do it if you want to do it. But you can't expect there to be no blowback. And also, these are people who go on reality television. There's not a high level of moral fiber there. There's not a high level of, I'm going to do everything right. I mean, I think sometimes you get people like one of the Bachelors, Ari, he's married, has a couple children. There are good people in it who want to find love. But a lot of times you're dealing with people who want a lot of attention, and you get more attention for being a social justice warrior right now.
Yeah. That's why we've kicked off all that stuff, because we used to watch it just like everybody else, but it just became such a slog at some point to go through. But either way, it's just a real reflection in ironically enough, reality television, which there's nothing real about it, is real in the fact that people A, are fighting over each other over who cannot be or who can be the most woke or who can right. have the most outlandish position or who can adapt the cultural norms of the moment. And it's like, wow, that's actually more real than anything else the last 10 years of this show. And people don't like it. That's the insane thing.
They don't like it. And I think you're going to see that a lot. You know, you see shows that come out of the gate really great. They have really interesting plot lines and they go down this path of sort of becoming social commentary. You see that a lot with superhero shows. I mean, even one time I saw in superhero shows during 2016 election, all of a sudden all the superheroes were saying stronger together, which was Hillary Clinton's catchphrase or motto. And you see them take on that hue of fighting for the people. People don't want that in television. They want to follow some love story together. They want Dawson's Creek. They want something that takes them out of it, that's something to aspire to in a happy way. They don't want to be drowned in politics. We have like 7,000 other channels to watch that on.
Yeah. Escapism television. Absolutely. And that we'll use that escapism idea to transition, as I try to do it correctly, to Chip Gaines. Chip Gaines is a name that you've been floating out for a little bit. Talk to me about Chip Gaines. What is the appeal of him?
Well, to me, the main appeal is that I'm very concerned that we're not going to get back suburban women voters or many female voters. I think looking at the data, no matter what happened in the elections, we have made huge losses with suburban women. And also, we need somebody who can look at the 2004 presidential race and see why Bush did so well with Hispanic voters, why he did so well with female voters, and take the knowledge from that and also take the knowledge from the populist races we've seen recently. And we need somebody who the left is not going to be able to pick apart their record of because they're not in politics. And to me, when I look at candidates, Chip Gaines is somebody that really stands out to me. He has a massive Christian following. He has, I believe, 6 children. He's been married a long time. He's built his own business. He understands social media. The media has fawned over him so much that it would be hard to tear him down. He's talked about politics in Texas. He's rebuilt part of Texas's infrastructure with the silos. He is somebody that I look at as sort of the model of where to go from here with the Republican Party. You keep some of the social conservatism, but you bring in somebody who's not just saying social conservative things, they're living it in their lives. And you bring that into populism, you bring that into economics with his business and with his media empire. That's the way forward to me, because I feel like that's new enough that the left will not just take out their playbook at the last 5 years and use it against them.
As a man who has been to the silos multiple times, because I live about 40 minutes away, and I have many things in my house that I look at my wife and I say, that's a mailbox. But my wife says, it's from Magnolia. And I go, still a mailbox. But my wife loves it. It's a very unique thing, because downtown Waco is still trying to be built around it. And it's the only thing they have besides Baylor. And it's very interesting that you bring all that up. My only question is this. My only thing about it is this. It's twofold. One, we saw a guy like Trump who had at least the experience of meeting with big time people, whatever you want to say, huge people, right? In different areas, in business, in sports, in politics. And he had international experience. He got swept away by the swamp because he had a bad team around him, obviously, as you said time and time again. But he also was a celebrated media figure that they turned on a dime on him. So my question is twofold. Wouldn't the worry be about Chip if he does successfully get in? Let's say he's able to control all that. Him getting lost because he doesn't have the political savvy. Maybe not because his wife wouldn't allow it. I don't know. But two, the fact that we cannot, as conservatives, take the media's past portrayal of somebody for granted, because they've been known, as we've seen with the lies that have come out. Oh, yeah, Trump didn't gas the people in the park to get a photo op. Oh, well, that's next on. So they're we know they're fully ready to lie, cheat, make up things to go after a guy like Chip. And he's a very average. I get everything you say. He's blue collar. I agree with it on some level. My fear is he'll get swept away and he'll be turned into a Christian bigot racist immediately. So just some thoughts on the table about that.
Yeah, I think that difference is that Trump was a media figure that was sort of stoked in glamour. And, you know, he was somebody who's married to a socialite and then someone in pageants and a model. He had this sort of James Bond feel to him. And that was always the media's portrayal of him. You know, the You're Fired thing, his reality show had to do with business, other celebrities. I think the difference would be that the right has not had, really since Reagan, a more wholesome media figure to get around. And when you have that on the right, like with Amy Coney Barrett, the right turned her into a wholesome media figure. If the establishment and the Trump base work together, that is very easy to accomplish. So I think with someone like Chip Gaines, it would be difficult to make him into a very nasty person, because people would look around their houses, like you said, and say, I have a mailbox from him, or I have a candle holder. We have stuff from Magnolia Home Collection in our house right now for my mom. So I think it's a different kind of feeling. And also, I think Chip Gaines, just having researched him and looked at him, he probably right now has a better circle of people around him than Trump ever did. He may not be a foreign policy president, but going forward, what we need in this country really is an infrastructure guy. We need somebody who understands local issues, because that's where we're drowning with economic recovery. So he might be somebody that outsources foreign policy to a very competent Secretary of State who has really great values. And that might have to be the trade-off. Trump is a big picture guy. Mm. If we went with someone like Chip Gaines in the model, or just in the model of that, we'd get a small picture guy. But a small picture guy knows who's lying to him. He knows who's not filing the paperwork, and he knows what the people in his area need.
Okay. Those are all really good points. And I'm going to give you the last 2 minutes to pretty much repeat what you said this weekend. And you talked to Mike about, because everybody goes to the one guy in 2024 that everybody is just already ready to crown. And that is one Ron DeSantis. Tell me, Miss Magdalene Rose here in the Bear Brief on the Crusade Channel, why Ron is not the choice.
Well, to me, Ron is not the choice, because I don't think Ron exists without Trump. And when I look at the 2018 governor race in Florida, he barely won that. It's not even a full percentage. He won it by just over 32,000 votes, 32,400-something. And that was against Andrew Gillum, who at the time, we already knew, was one of the most flawed candidates to ever run in Florida political, or really political history. And Trump was on social media at that time. It was Trump's home state. Trump had not been impeached the second time. We're at the pinnacle of Trump enthusiasm, and Ron DeSantis could still only win by about 32,000 votes. So you contrast that with now, where Trump has less power on social media, and the fact that Ron DeSantis is going to be very difficult to market. He went to Harvard and Yale. He's a congressman. He's in the military. That's great. But he's pretty much a career politician. So if you have two career politicians of him and Biden, and you're looking at it, the career politician with more media backing is going to be showed better, which will be Biden because of who he is as a Democrat. So with Ron DeSantis, it's not that I hate him. I have nothing against him personally. I haven't heard any nasty things about him. I just don't have the confidence that he is a standalone candidate. He's not somebody to me that you look at and go, he's going to define everything. He's more someone who reiterates everything.
Yeah, he has absolutely 100%. Adopted Trumpism in every way, shape, and form, which I get. He's in, like you said, Trump's home state is Florida. He goes to Mar-a-Lago often, which yeah. You've mentioned in a previous video is not a great thing. I'm going to give you a second to talk about that. And even the joke is, I think I made that joke. We mentioned that people have already put side by sides. He has the same hand gestures as President Trump. Yes. He does the A-OK. He does the hands together, hands apart thing. And people are like, he is a spray tan away from just being a clone of Trump. But talk real quick about his trips to Mar-a-Lago and the potential, if he was to run on the national stage, of Trump's circle, which I know you mentioned to Mike about, and I want you to reiterate for my audience here in the Bear Brief, just kind of globbing onto him and how they could take a pretty standard guy and actually take him back in some ways. Yeah.
Well, definitely. He is at Mar-a-Lago all the time. Trump is always around him. He's in the fundraising circuit in Florida. My concern is that we will see the same people who told Trump not to pardon people and not to become more of a populist and not to find new European allies and all the things that we as conservatives hated about the Trump presidency. All those people are waiting for a new guy. And I'm very suspicious that the people that we all disliked the most, like Charlie Kirk and people like that, who were out there for Trump, are now out there for Ron DeSantis. I'm skeptical that even if he has a great wife, which I've heard she's a great person, she's very capable, that's not enough to override the network of grifters that he will inherit. And grifters are so strange because they will are on some level very loyal to whoever they think is going to be their next meals ticket. And that's what we're seeing with Ron DeSantis. I've seen a lot of young conservatives who've said, I'm afraid to criticize Ron DeSantis because I feel like all the influencers are going to come after me. To me, as a conservative, that's always a red flag, because when we're strong in conservatism and in our values and ideas and we have a platform, we never get into this strange cult fascination with a cat.
That, and yeah, you're very correct that we haven't had somebody on this side of the political aisle that has garnered this much of a following. I mean, we've always had like, oh, look at Ted. Ted Cruz is yelling at Mark Zuckerberg again. This is so cool. Or look at Rubio. He was on Time Magazine. He talks about Jay-Z. Yeah. There was always little fascinations, little infatuations. But it is a full-blown crush on Ron DeSantis right now. And as you said, that's bad because it gives the media more time to pick on him. And him and Kemp, Trump had to drag across the finish line. And I use that word intentionally. He dragged both of them across the finish line. And yes, I know people are pointing to the COVID response, but I don't know. But COVID is still such a divisive topic. I know you're in college right now. It's still a divisive topic that I don't know if his record and the way he was pushing back again, because everybody that agrees with him essentially moved to Florida. Like, there's nobody else that is in the states that he would need to win. So just two questions. That the fact that his COVID policies may not translate nationally, and what are you seeing at the collegiate level in regards to vaccinations, COVID? Now that we've been in this a year, how is the collegiate population reacting to it? How are they vaccine-wise hesitant, not hesitant? Or how are they reacting to the push by people like, hey, you vax a million, get some French fries, get all this other stuff, all this kind of stuff?
People my age are not as gung-ho about the vaccination as people think. And it's not, you know, skepticism or anything. They just don't feel like this was handled correctly at all. And I think for a lot of young people, if you look at the influencer, you know, the young people on like Instagram who make money off of that, they're all very pro-vaccination. They're all very pro, you must get it, you must get it. But if you talk to regular college students who just like want to go back to their law program or their nursing program, they're like, I'll get it if I have to get it, but I don't think that it's the savior of all the COVID population. Personally, and that's why, personally, I don't think Democrats believe that young people are so gung-ho about it either, which is why you see people from the CDC out there telling parents they should pressure their kids to get the vaccine and to push other people to. The people in love with this whole rollout of the vaccine are people in like the 40 age bracket, people who are older than that, not really millennials, not really my generation, people who want to just trust Joe Biden with everything they have, people who are not skeptics.
So you're saying the boomers are in love with the rollout?
The boomers. I think so.
By the way, Magdalene, your analysis of people like me, a geriatric millennial, I heard what you were saying this morning about how we're a lost cause, and I'd have to agree with you 100%. We're kind of just out of it at this point. But no, it really is, because millennials essentially have just checked out. We just don't care about any of this stuff. But it is interesting how boomers and Gen Z are kind of fighting back and forth in the political. Gen Xers, millennials, we've kind of understood that we've all been kind of dismissed. So it's the boomers and, like, let's take a look at it politically. The boomers, your Trumps, that group, versus your Charlie Kirks and all of these trying to fight, at least in the establishment. And the rest of us kind of sitting back going, we don't like any of these options.
Yes, definitely. And I think that's going to get even worse, because there's a major, not even culture clash, but a clash of what does the future look like? My generation, people younger, we're like, we have to adapt or this whole country's like going to fail. And I think older people in the boomer category are not really awake to the level of threat we're facing from countries like Austria, who are developing great technology, or smaller countries. They're not awake to how much the world is changing and how far behind we are, especially in the education realm.
How much do you see Magdalene Rose, once again joining me here in the Bear Brief on the Crusade Channel, a newest addition to the Crusade Channel? She's giving us political analysis. It's an absolute great get, and we're really honored and grateful that she's going to be a part of our little crusade here. Now, we've never talked about this, but I really want to get your input on it. Yeah. How do you see Bitcoin as a disruptor going forward here nationally mm-hmm. and internationally? Because we just saw El Salvador yeah. has picked it yeah. up. And now we see Elizabeth Warren and we see other politicians mm-hmm. starting to hem and haw about Bitcoin mm-hmm. because of its potential impact. And yeah. I know people in your age bracket, the meme stonks and all this other kind of stuff, driving everything all over the place. Not me. I invested in Dogecoin and then Doge just dropped. So you can't, like I said, I'm a millennial. So anytime I get involved in this stuff, it just flames out. So I've decided to step back. But the whole idea of how the Gen Zers are interacting with finances, either with Bitcoin yeah. or with meme stocks. How is the GOP, because I know you mentioned this a little bit with Mike, how is the GOP, how is conservatism going to adopt that? Because that seems like it's ripe for the picking.
Yeah, it definitely is. Well, Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, that is the issue of my generation. People want to feel like they have freedom in their money. The big bank thing, all of us are awake to the fact that banks are overcharging, that they really are acting in a very piggish way, to be quite honest. So when you see people like Trump be skeptical of Bitcoin, I think he's a bit behind in the times and not realizing how much potential there is, because those voters who are not socially conservative but are not socialists or anything, those voters care about Bitcoin in my age bracket. And there is a huge ability for the Republican Party to pick them up, especially because there's nothing like a corporate Democrat to shoot down the dreams of young people. They are always going to be against anything that provides more economic freedom. So if you go in as a Republican candidate and you say, I'm pro Bitcoin, right now it's still controversial to say that. I don't believe as we get closer to midterms in 2024, it will be controversial to say that. Whichever party puts out a platform that not only embraces Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, but invests in young people learning about it and getting more freedom in the currency world will pick up, I think, even in as much as 15% more voters than previously.
Really? That much of yeah. a pickup just by yeah. having you say, I like Bitcoin, and not even saying anything else?
Yeah.
Really?
I think if you do that, because people my age are drowning in debt. We're drowning in debt. Nobody can buy a home. You can't start a family. It's really bad in economics. Healthcare is a major cost that nobody has addressed. So whichever party gives young people a lifeline to have some control over their own money and to build themselves up, it will be like a new investment in my generation. If I was a Republican politician or leader, I'd say the Bitcoin cryptocurrency thing is an investment in your generation, and we're the party leading that investment.
Wow, that's something that obviously I had no idea about looking at. Because, yes, yeah, so as we're talking to Magdalene Rose here, we've seen the trillions of dollars being spent, the $1.7 trillion that's on the table for infrastructure, mm-hmm. and the fact that money is losing its value at a record rate, and they're trying to push off inflation. Like, inflation's only good because, I mean, it's great because that means the economy's roaring back, and everybody's going, no, that's not how this works in any way, shape, or form. And yet it seems like when they highlight people in the college age or a little bit older, what's the only thing that you guys want? Well, we want our student debt gone. We just want you guys to get yeah. rid of our student debt. And it's not an accurate reflection of kids that have been told, and I had this fight going back to education. I used to fight other teachers when they told every student, you have to go to college, you have to go to college. I said, no, trades, community colleges, do something else. You don't have to go somewhere and put yourself in debt. Because we put and it's two or three or four entire generations into college, go do it. And then now that you guys are looking, as you said, at a real bad housing forecast, I don't know if you've seen, I'm sure you have, these stories that are coming up about these firms that are buying up houses and just driving yes. up the price. Yes. So you guys can't get houses anymore, or the fact that yeah. jobs are being shipped anywhere and everywhere, and they're focusing on automation. So jobs are gone too. And they kind of just are like, well, you guys have iPhones, so just be happy because you have all this technology. And you're like, that's great, but what about the values that you guys had? The famous meme of a couple in their 30s, we're buying a house now, and then it's you. I can't afford a double cheeseburger because everything. Right. I don't have a job. I don't have anything to invest in. So you guys looking out, yeah, I can see why economics, and they don't think it. They try to push social issues. You guys are all about yeah. social issues, and you're like, no, yeah, maybe, but I actually want to be able to buy a dinner.
Yes. Yes, definitely. We are. That is really what it comes down to. We want to be able to buy things for our parents. We want to be able to have a car. And this is something where when I hear Elizabeth Warren go down this route, I think that's the right route. Talk about personal finances. But she doesn't have enough power in the Democrat Party to really lead that. So on the Republican side, I honestly believe you need new people because Ted Cruz does not really understand what this is about. No matter how many times he says it, Rubio says nothing about it. There's no real Republican governor except maybe DeSantis a little bit talking about cryptocurrency. To me, this is almost something that you need conservative broadcasters and radio show hosts and influencers to talk about because that's where politicians get all of their insights on where to go now. You know, how many times do we see Trump change course literally in the middle of something because Tucker told him to do something or how did he told him to do something? That's really where the power in the conservative movement comes from.
All right, final question I have for you, and I appreciate you giving us a little bonus time here on the Bear Brief on the Crusade Channel. Caitlyn Jenner, what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's ridiculous. I think, you know, go ahead and run if you want. But to me, that recount was such a hard-fought thing. I saw things about it for a while. I didn't even take it seriously. And then I saw, I was like, wow, great job, guys. People who organize that. So it's a real opportunity, and it's not something that should be taken away by somebody who just wants to run to promote themselves and to do all that. I think we've had enough of the Kardashian-Jenner people, to be quite honest with you. I'm kind of tapped out with the whole family because of how much influence they seem to have for no reason. We got nothing from it. So to me, we need a real candidate, somebody who is really well-known in California politics or the California private sector, not somebody that's going to attract the exact thing you just asked me, like, what do you think about it? Not what do you think about policies, but what do you think about the situation? This shouldn't be a situation. This should be... This is what Gavin Newsom has done wrong. He's not going to correct it. He's not even sorry about it. You need some other choice.
Yeah, and the fact that it's almost a joke to have Caitlin the Bruce, as some of us have referred to him, stepping in as he wants to be a quote-unquote disruptor, and people are going, well, what are your thoughts on this or that? And his standard response is, I'm a disruptor. And Democrats don't have celebrity candidates. They love celebrities, but they don't have celebrity candidates. And Republicans, conservatives, always fall for celebrity candidates, whether they're in primaries and then they're like, oh, I'm sorry, I polled last. Sorry, guys. Thanks for the donations and all and buying my book. But we always fall for it. And it looks like we're falling for it again, because also it's the fact that most conservatives don't think California is even worth putting money into at this point, because to them, it's just gone.
Yeah, it definitely is. And that's why Democrats win a lot of times, because they know how to use celebrity, but they know who to run to win things. And that's something Republicans have to learn. It might feel really good to donate to the person running against AOC or, you know, at the time, someone running against Kamala Harris. But those people aren't going to win. That's why I only have on candidates who are within a certain margin to win or in a competitive race. We have to take away the glamorization of these candidates who are going to take on these big figures that we don't like on the right. And we have to put the focus on people who are going to actually win. Because to win back the House, you have to actually get people elected. It cannot just be who you like tweeting about. And I think that's something we've lost in the last 5 years, really since Trump came on the scene, because he was such a celebrity figure.
That's correct. And speaking, you mentioned AOC, so I know I keep saying thanks, but I got to get one more question in. The thing that happened this week, and I torched conservative media for this, the AOC abuela trap. I called it the AOC abuela trap, because she came out, she's like, oh, my abuela, she's a this. And so what do conservatives do? What's the first thing? Oh, you drive a Tesla and you get this. So she came back and said, well, you guys are colonizers and you don't know the struggles of immigrants. And then we said, okay, well, Matt Walsh is like, I'll raise $100,000. Oh, and she literally said, your money is no good to me. So not only did we get embarrassed on the first hand by making fun of her for her economic situation, then we got embarrassed because she's like, I don't even want your help. And the fact that she's such a Twitter celebrity, it just shows we get torched when we try to play in this cesspool with them.
Right. This is not our game. We're not the people who excel at this. You know, we excel at in-person stuff. We excel at creating contracts for America to revamp major things. We don't excel at this little nitty-gritty social media stuff in the same way they do. Let them have it. Nobody likes them who's not on their side. Some people like some Republicans when they're not Republicans. So you can find some sort of middle ground. But when we get sucked into that sort of stuff, to me, all I think is there wasn't a candidate in California who's running in a tight race who could have used $100,000. Why didn't you crowdfund? Why didn't you try to make donations? These other political candidates, sometimes I see Hannity talking about the struggles of, you know, people in tight races, and I think to myself, you have like tens of millions of dollars. Like, organize something. Get someone some funding. They like to pretend that they're just struggling along, and it just isn't true.
Yeah, the conservative media establishment, Fox, Daily Wire, all that stuff, they are not short of funds. So when they try to do the woe is me game, they get bashed by people like us, like, hey, why don't you throw us a bone? And on the other side, they just get bashed for all the normal talking points that it is. So hopefully with Miss Magdalene Rose joining the Crusade Channel and hopefully promoting our message and trying to get these things out there, we can make more of a difference. And Magdalene, thank you for hanging out with us as long as you did.
Yeah.
And we are super excited and very happy to have you aboard.
Well, thank you so much for having me on your show all those times. That's what made it possible.
Well, you're one of the few unfortunate people that said yes to coming on, because not many others said. And really, it's when you have talent and determination that you have, it just shines through. So thank you for coming on, and thank you for joining us on this crusade. It's going to be fun.
Thank you so much for having me on.
All right. Look forward to working with you.